You're with Cape Talk.
This is John Matham on Afternoon Drive.
20 minutes past three, as we've heard in Eyewitness News, the Stellenbosch University have put charges to the student who is, well, he did urinate on somebody's desk. There's video evidence of that. And he has, I think, until the end of the day to answer to those charges. Cyril Ramaphosa, in his Dear Fellow South African Monday newsletter, starts by saying the country has in recent days been outraged at the sight of a white student at the University of Stellenbosch degrading and humiliating a fellow black student in a despicable act. There has been widespread anger that such acts still take place in a country with a bitter past like ours, a past which we fought so hard to overcome. It is more troubling that such incidents are happening at schools and places of higher learning. A number of the people involved were born after the end of apartheid. While the incident at Stellenbosch may seem like an aberration, an appalling act that has been roundly condemned, the truth is that racism is still a feature of everyday life in South Africa. The sooner we recognize that reality, the sooner we can change that. And a little later on, he says we need to understand what is causing racist attitudes to flourish in our schools and places of higher learning. We need to understand what kind of institutional cultures contribute to racism in the workplace, in social organizations, and in communities. Commentator Solly Mueng is with us now on Zoom. Solly, good afternoon.
Hi, John. And to listeners.
I think the first point that I would like to raise is whether racist attitudes are flourishing, which implies that they are in a growth phase. And I wonder if that is the case. I wonder whether what we've got is what we've always had, which is a sort of seething level of racism at some point, which every now and then erupts into an incident which makes the news and then becomes a center point of conversation.
Frank, you know, John, hi. I think we went, at some point we're going to need to stop a little bit and ask ourselves, what is racism? And I'm happy that the president mentions that racism can be directed at anyone. And he doesn't say irrespective of your skin color, because the fact of the matter is that when you say racism in South Africa, we're referring to racism by white people on black people. And when you talk to this incident of this man, in the thing about him is that in response to when he was being questioned, he said something about, that's what we white boys do. I don't know if he meant we do it to black people, because that's an interpretation, apparently. But it could have been that he could have done it to a white boy. But anyway, he did it to a black boy in a country that with a history of ours, and he responded in the way that he did, which takes it to a different level. But are these incidents growing? Who is feeling racism in South Africa? We don't want the conversation that says colors or blacks or white people are feeling racism as a result of, you know, race-based policies, but they are. I mean, we have to call it what it is. So are we through these policies creating a lot of anger that's growing, that's making people respond in the way they do, or they will in the future? We should be having those conversations. They're a lot more complex than saying, oh, poor black people. I mean, the president also speaks about the Black Lives Matter. When you look at how black people are governed by and led by black people in Africa, surely that's racism. Or is it not racism because it's black people who are doing bad things on black people? So there's a bit of hypocrisy in this discussion about racism.
But he does point out, and I think it is true, Solly. You know, it's difficult because I'm a white man of advancing years, and with that comes a great deal of privilege. With that comes a sort of series of expectations that I'm a vaguely decent person who deserves whatever he has in society. So I cannot recall an incident in, let's start with F.W. de Klerk's speech in February of 1990. I can't recall anything in the 32 years since then that seemed to me racist directed at me. So it's very difficult for me to speak with any kind of personal experience. But it does seem that white people being racist towards blacks is more common than black people being racist towards whites, or colored people being racist towards blacks, or black people being racist towards Indians, and all of those cross skin color barriers which were codified by apartheid.
Well, in look, because of the history of South Africa, of course, black people have been at the brunt of racism. Nobody can deny that. But racism doesn't stop there. I mean, I have taught young white students, not just at UCT, and who cry that they get denied opportunities because of the skin of the color of their skin. I mean, that is truth. We don't want to talk about that, John. And I can imagine it's harder for many white people of advancing age to acknowledge that younger white people are being turned away from stuff that they shouldn't be turned away from on the basis only of their skin color. We should talk about that. We shouldn't wait for the wave to for the wave to be huge and massive, and suddenly people are pissing all over the place before we start saying, wait a minute, there's a problem here. Let's try and nap it in the bud before it goes too far. There's a lot of anger that people are bottling in. But of course, there's racism against black people. Nobody can deny that. But we mustn't stop there. I really think that we need to go deeper into why would a young man, such as, because he's a young man, why would he do what he did and still be able to stand up and say, well, that's what we do to black people. What's driving him? Let's go deeper to that, into that, and understand why. Are there others who agree with him, who are angered, who are like silently saying, let's find other ways to hit back at these black people because we feel that we're not being loved in our own country? How many young white people are leaving the country, John? You haven't left. You have a great job. You have a life to live in Cape Town and in South Africa, and you don't need to leave South Africa. But many young people are saying, wait a minute, we can't live here anymore because we're being stopped right and left and center. We can't, because we are privileged, we can't deny the hurt, the pain of other of those who don't have the privilege that we have.
So what are we, you know, I mean, it's quite odd hearing you speak more about what young white boys are thinking than what young black boys and girls, young black men and women are feeling. That you see more on the side of white people feeling left out of the new South Africa than black people not being taken seriously as potential contributors to the new South Africa.
Look, there was a time when racism in South Africa was you could almost draw a line, white people on the one side. Even then, it was really complicated. I mean, if you think of all those many young white men who refused to serve in the apartheid, I mean, others who lost privileges and who had to leave the country because they opposed apartheid. So there was never really a point where it was clearly one line with white people and black people on their side. There have always been others caught on the other side of the line. But of course, at the bigger scale of it, black people have been and continue. Well, I would say, but the thing is, if you look at how money is taken, that could have improved the lives of many black people. Surely that's a form of racism, or is it tribalism, or is it ethnicism? What is it? When if the ANC government were a white government, doing what it's doing, and the more people who are supposed to be benefiting from its policies were black people, we would say they are racist. We have a racist government in South Africa. I think we have a racist government in South Africa and in much of Africa, people who do not care about the plight of the black people. But we fight racism. It's easier to fight it when it appears to be white people doing bad things to black people. I think we should talk about, maybe we should come up with another name. Human beings must not treat other human beings like that. We need to come up with another term and just racism that looks at only when white people seem to be doing the wrong thing. Black people are doing wrong things all the time, and that's a conversation that we should have. Colored people, colored people in Cape Town who hate black people, who blame their being unemployed on the fact that there are too many black people in Cape Town. I know that. We don't want to talk about it. There are Muslim people who can't stand white people, and that's on race. But so this, it's a lot more complicated than just focusing forever because it's politically correct to be concerned about the black plight. We should be concerned about humans being treated so badly on the basis of their identity in South Africa and find out another term to deal with it and stop people from behaving in the way they do, because it's just not right. Whether the person whose book you're pissing on is a black person, a colored person, a white person, it shouldn't happen. And why are people doing that?
Okay, well, that we haven't really got to, and unfortunately, I wonder, Solly, if you wouldn't mind just hanging around until after the news so we can continue that conversation, because I think it's important for us to get into that question of why are people doing that? Because unless there is a kind of consensus as to why people are doing it, then you're not going to have a generally agreed strategies to stop it happening. Are you able to hold on for a few minutes?
I shall hold on, John.
Thank you very much. Solly Mueng will be back with us in a few minutes. Alcohol is why there's racism. No, alcohol alcohol's disinhibiting effect reveals the inner racist in people. It doesn't make people racist. It allows people to be what they internally are, really.
You're with Cape Talk.
This is John Matham on Afternoon Drive.
Back to commentator Solly Mueng, who is still with us via Zoom. So, Solly, what are the reasons why there is... Look, I mean, it's kind of obvious what the reasons are, but maybe not so obvious. Maybe they are more complex, more nuanced than, you know, you go, well, there's competition for resources because there are fewer jobs and there's fewer pay for those jobs. And there is competition for just about every aspect of climbing a ladder. And when that happens, competition makes people emotional. It makes people, sit on the edge of a ledge rather than in a safe chair 50 meters away from the ledge. Why is it happening?
Look, John, I love this question. The answer is as complex as the question is. If we were to ask this young man who went to piss onto another person's computer and books, why did you do that? Now, we're having this conversation because it was a black boy who did it on property that belonged to a black boy. But suppose there were two black boys, what kind of conversations would we be having? If it were two white boys, what kind of conversations would we be having?
We'd be having different conversations because they are exactly different situations.
Yeah, but John, it could be that this young man is actually not racist, but well, he said he is, or at least he said that's what we do as white boys, and that, as I said, it complicates the discussion. But we should ask, and we live in silos in South Africa. We still have silos that we still need to break. White people generally live with white people, black people. You know, of course, there's a middle ground that's gaining grounds, but people still live, colored people still live in colored communities, black people in communities, and I am privileged to have friends who are colored, who are Indian, who are white, and I say crazy things, I hear people say crazy things about other people, John. Even some people would say in my presence, well, black people are like this. I said, dude, I'm black, you know what I'm saying? So, but in those silos, John, perceptions, preconceived ideas, things get repeated and over and over again, to the point where people grow up with those things. Those things are not questioned, and they act upon them. And there's also anger. I think we should ask ourselves, are young white people angry? We should not stop dismissing this thing like we dismiss farm matters, discussions about farm matters. We should have a discussion. Are they angry? Why are so many parents saying, my kids must leave, my kids will leave? Whether we admit it or not, John, it's happening, all right? We should ask ourselves, have a fair, honest conversation. And are people acting out on those things and that anger, that frustration, that sense of not belonging anymore? How are they acting out that anger? Maybe if we had a conversation, if you invited this young man to your show one day and said, and asked him, and hopefully he'll be honest with you, and said, why are you doing this? Is this the kind of thing that your friends or people network, assuming that all his friends are white, of course, I'm making a lot of assumptions here. Is there something that makes you, did you feel like, took out some level of frustration when you did that? Were you trying to do that, or was it just a moment of you had too much gin and tonic and you did what you did? So we don't know, John. But it's so easy to have a conversation, blame everything on racism, especially when it's a white person doing a black thing, a bad thing when a black person in South Africa, even around the world. But black people do black things that are, as I said earlier, to black people that are not good, that could have been seen as racist if they were done by white people. So I think that we should have a conversation. What's going on in South Africa? How can we arrest it? And as we said earlier, is it just one person who is an aberration, or is there a bigger fear that people are afraid to talk about? Anger. Let's just dig into that and understand what's happening. Are there things in the way we South Africa is run, the way we do things in South Africa, that could make sure those people, young men and women, don't grow up into very angry people who are going to be antisocial? Because if we don't do anything about it, John, we're going to end up with really, really angry young people of all colors. Even in the colored community, as I said earlier, there are many young colored people who really feel that they are being left out of jobs. The whole thing of we were not white enough during apartheid, we're not black enough now, it's there. It's still there.
How do we talk about it in a way that not makes it go away? Because that seems extremely unlikely for for some reasons, and I've read a lot of sociologists and anthropologists on this, there is a racism in some people and there is not a racism in other people. So, you know, the Nordic countries, wasn't much racism, of course, until black refugees started arriving on the shores of Sweden and Norway and Finland, and all of a sudden they had a racism issue. So it's kind of inbuilt somehow into our cultural DNA. So how do you have a conversation which doesn't eliminate it, because that seems impossible, but reduces it and reduces the expression of it?
Yeah, John, we are not born with a cultural DNA. I don't believe anybody's born with any cultural DNA. I think we are socialized into cultures, into way things are done. So obviously, when you take a Nordic country where at some period there were not many black people, suddenly there are suddenly all these black people, and they do things differently. And we start saying, wait a minute, what's going on? This is étranger. This is strange to the way we do things. It's not acceptable. And it seems like all of them are doing it. Oh, maybe this person is doing this or saying this because they are black. But in the same way, we black people do the same thing. We say, I see it on social media. A white person responds to something, they are racist. But if a black person had said exactly the same thing, they are not racist, they are silly, or they are something else. So we need to socialize children. I teach a course, John, at the EU Business School on how people can integrate multicultural environments. And it's important. So my students come from places like Saudi Arabia, America, Ukraine, Russia, Germany. How do you grow? How do you let go of those things that you were told when you were a young child about other people, about other silos? You know, how do you, if you're coming from Saudi Arabia, you get an awesome job in America and suddenly your boss is a lesbian. How do you deal with that? You know, these are the kind of things that we talk about. So there are things that we are being told in all societies. It could be from culture, tradition, religion, that are not true about the kind of society that the world is becoming. Multicultural, people are moving. Urban migration, national migration, geographic migration has been happening for years. It's happening even more now. So how do we prepare young people to integrate a world in which their own cultures, the cultures they grew up in, do not make the rules, where the rules are totally different or even opposed to what they were told? And these are the discussions we should have about all South African children, black, white, colored, Indian, Chinese, whatever. They should be taught to live in a world that's multicultural. When you grow children in silos, you inadvertently, it's not always deliberate, John, it's you inadvertently telling them only what you know, because that's a silo you're in, right? But suddenly when you have a multicultural environment in front of you, you have to be mindful of that and get children to grow up thinking, knowing that actually it's not just about you. You're just a little drop in a beautiful white world, ocean of multiculturalism. So, and that's what we have to talk. Now, of course, now we're really waking up to this in South Africa, where people who grew up in all those silos suddenly integrate into the bigger multicultural environment. They say things sometimes innocently or do things sometimes innocently that hurt other people. See, how do we need to start from the beginning. And those conversations we had at dinners with people who look like us.
I have no experience of what's happening at school since my younger daughter left school, which is 10, 11 years ago. So I have no idea what sort of thing is happening at primary school, at creches, because, you know, everything must be age appropriate. But I mean, is not the fact that black and white and colored and Indian children, to use the apartheid labels, are together in the same classroom? So, you know, what you need more than that, because, you know, there is white, the minute a school, the minute a former Model C school reaches a kind of 50% majority or 51% black majority, immediately the white parents start taking their children out of that school. And that's a reality. You drive around Cape Town, you look at the schools that once were all white and then were kind of 30% black and colored and 70% white. The minute they became 55% black and white, parents started taking their kids out of there. And now they're 90-95% black. So, you know, what kind of conversation needs to be happening in those schools for those children to go back to mom and dad and say, mom and dad, I actually want to stay there. I'm enjoying getting to know people who see life differently from the way I do.
Yeah, John, you know what? I love you. The questions you ask. The thing, John, is that the teachers, the kindergarten and high school, primary school, they have to first acknowledge that they're actually part of a system. Whoever they are, we're all part of a system. We need to learn to cultivate a culture where people ask, look into the mirror and say, why am I doing things this way? Why do I do it? Because the things a lot of kindergarten kids hear things they shouldn't hear. We don't know about them because they're not. It's only much later when they're 20, 21. So, this is what this teacher used to say to us. You know what I'm saying? So they're not young enough, they're not old enough or wise enough to come to say to the parents, you know what? This is what they said. My daughter in Cape Town, when she was about 6, 7, in Cape Town in school, she was denied. So one of her friends was holding a slip over. It's my son. It wasn't my daughter. And she was told, no, my mother, by the friend, my parents said I can't bring a black friend over. Now, I don't know how many parents do that, John. So the parents who pretend to be cool, forward-looking, they are the ones who say this to black people. The parents who say, you know what, oops, too many black people in the school, I'm going to take my kids out. Why are they doing that? We should have those conversations. What is it that you fear about too many black people in a school? And let's have those conversations. What is it that acceptable, unacceptable about having too many black people? What influence? Most white South Africans don't speak African languages, John. Most of my white friends in South Africa who spoke African languages are people who came from France, Belgium. You'd be surprised. I've seen Chinese people speaking South. So there's this attitude that's been ingrained by apartheid, John, that says black is inferior. And we need to change that. People need to realize, we're just human. When you really allow yourself to look at other people as human, John, you will see that we're just so human, all of us, in the same way. But you have to break down those barriers. And they exist not just in white people. It in colored people, in Indian people, in black people. There are people who say you don't bring a white child here to marry them or a colored person or whatever. There are still people like that. And so those kids who go to multicultural environments still go home. Many of them still go back to those silos. And it is in those silos where those things, those preconceived ideas are repeated over and over. Oh, you have a black friend, be careful, Oh, you have a white friend, be careful, So the kids have to get to a point where they say, but why are you saying that, mom? That's not true. It's only usually, unfortunately, when they're teens or, around when they start getting, that they started, wait a minute, that's not true. What my parents have taught me is not true. This young man who was pissing that we're talking about now, I totally believe, John, that in 10 years' time, he's going to look back and say, damn, why did I do that? That was the most stupid thing I've done. So do we break him, do we damage him, or do we turn this child and turn him into a better citizen of South Africa, of the world, into the future?
Or do we make an example of him? You might have these thoughts, but do not express them by urinating on somebody else. You know, because you can't change the way people think, but at least you can change the way that people behave and the way they express their less noble beliefs.
Absolutely. There has got to be consequences. I'm not saying there shouldn't be consequences. We live in a country where there's too much impunity at many levels, including especially at political level. There's got to be consequences, but we shouldn't stop there. We should ask ourselves, and you did ask the question earlier, John, is this a pattern? Is there an underlying growth of this kind of conduct or attitude, fear, et cetera, anxiety that's growing? Let's look further into it and see if we can stop it before it becomes a big national problem. He should be punished because we don't want to see another white boy doing the same thing tomorrow to another child who's black or Indian or colored or the other way around, right? There's got to be consequences, but we also shouldn't stop there. We should say, okay, we seem to have a problem here, or let's investigate to what extent this is a problem. We've got professionals in South Africa who can do this sort of thing at academic and institutions, and let's deal with it. But we must stop thinking that racism only comes from white to black, because it's not true. That's what is politically correct in South Africa. Of course, informed much by the history, but actually racism can be expressed by anybody. And I've seen black racists, John. Anyone who tells me that black people cannot be racist is fooling you.
Solly Mueng, commentator. Thank you very, very, very much, Solly. Thank you very, very much indeed. And let me go through some of the WhatsApps that have come in before we move on to Eskom and sabotage. John, why does Stellenbosch University need to go through a hearing with this Tutoi instead of expelling him immediately? Because the evidence is there. There can be no excuse for what he did. Well, I think Solly and I are slightly in disagreement on this. I do think that a white boy urinating on a black boy's belongings is a more serious act than a white boy urinating on a white boy's belongings or a black boy urinating on a black boy's belongings, because there is racism there. A white boy doing it to another white boy or a black boy doing it to another black boy, that's drunken, loutish behavior. It's kind of terrible physical and emotional vandalism, but it's not racism. And I think that makes it different. And I think that the university, I do think it is necessary for the university to explore to what extent racism is part of it. is we have the black student saying that he kept calling me boy through the conversation. And when I asked him afterwards, once the recording had been turned off, I asked him, why did you do this? And he said, it's because it's what white boys do, with the implication it's what white boys do to black people, though he doesn't seem to have finished that sentence. Maybe he was too drunk. So I think that needs to be explored so that the university can say, we've heard from the urinated on student and we've heard from the urinator, and this is the way we think about it now that we've considered all the factors involved.